Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I have brought to the program Linda Weaver Clark. She is the author of the historical fiction series of novels, A Family Saga in Bear Lake. The first in this series, Melinda and the Wild West, was released in 2006 and was a semi-finalist for the ReaderView's Reviewer's Choice Award for 2007. And she is here today to talk about her latest installment, Edith and the Mysterious Stranger, which was published by American Book Publishing. So a little bit about this author. Linda Weaver Clark was raised on a farm surrounded by the rolling hills of southern Idaho and has made her home in southern Utah among the beautiful red mountains and desert heat. She is happily married and is the mother of six daughters and has four grandchildren. Linda received her Bachelor's of Arts degree at Southern Utah University and writes articles for the American Chronicle. She has traveled throughout the United States teaching a family legacy workshop, which encourages others to turn their family history and autobiography into a variety of interesting stories. So I am so happy to have Linda on the phone today. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Linda.
Thank you. It's nice to be here and be able to talk to you.
Yes. Well, you and I actually dialogued and met a while back when you came out with Melinda and the Wild West. So really congratulations on the award that you received. And I'm just so happy to have you here today.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So you write in historical fiction. And, you know, I mentioned just in the bio here that you do your family legacy workshop. I'd like to know a little bit how you got this interest, if it's been since you were a young child, or why you are so interested in history and how you became so intimately involved in your own family history and basically putting it out there in your books.
Well, it wasn't until the last 10 years that I started to become more interested in my family history. My mother was always into it, and she did a lot of writing, and sort of my grandparents, they put a lot of biographies together. But it wasn't until the last few years that I started to have a really great interest. I think maybe the early 1990s, and I started to do a little more research, and I found out that the stories were so intriguing. And that was when I decided that the stories that had already been written down, the stories that had been recorded, were in factual form. And I felt like that they could be told in a more interesting way, in a way that would be difficult to put it down, or in a way to bring these ancestors to life, to make them look like that they're living people, and they're breathing, and they actually had a life here on this earth. As many times we read just the facts alone, and it doesn't really come to us the true reality about them.
Mm.
I feel like that if you put it down in story form and make those ancestors come to life, then you can finally realize that they had feelings just like we did, but the way we do, and they not only had feelings, but they had conflicts, and they had all of these things happen to them, and it's just like you read about your family history or your ancestors, and it tells about that your grandmother had a child die at the age of five with pneumonia, and then you go on down reading the rest of the stuff, and it's like it doesn't even affect you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put it into a story form and try to help your readers or try to help your children understand what your ancestors went through, then they'll be able to feel the anguish that she could have felt by losing this child, or the fear they could have felt in a certain situation. In factual form, we don't feel the fear or the sadness or the love or, you know, whatever the emotions are. But if we write it down with those emotions, then our characters come to life. Well, after I got through writing over a dozen of my ancestors' stories, I couldn't stop writing, and so I turned to historical fiction, and that's the direction I went, and I put a few of my ancestors' little experiences here and there in it because it makes it kind of fun. I enjoy it. Yeah. I fly all over the United States, from the east to the west, north and south, mm-hmm. Trying to teach people this. And I teach it at libraries. The libraries will hire me to come, and I'll teach it, and then it's free to the public. And the public can come, and it's a two-hour workshop, and I call it the Family Legacy Workshop. Uh-huh. I really enjoy it. I get to know lots of people.
I bet you do. You know, it's an interesting way to bridge the past in the present, because I think we can really get caught up in life as we know it right now. You know, it's changed so much, say, since the time of, like, the books that you're putting out. And mm-hmm. so it's really an interesting way to connect back with people, you know, 100 years ago, and know that, you know, inside in who we are as people haven't really changed that much. The world exterior may have.
Yeah. True.
Yeah. Do you find that with an increase in people really wanting to do genealogy searches and find out their family history that you're getting more interest in this?
Mm-hmm. Yes. In fact, I have had a lot of people come that want to even do their own autobiography. But there's this one that was just really a wonderful experience. It was in the San Bernardino, California area when I was doing this. A woman raised her hand and she says, "My husband died about 20 years ago when we were young and I had little children, and they never got to know their father. And so I've been trying to sit down and write his history so they can get to know their father, and I've been struggling with this." And then tears came to her eyes, and it made everybody become emotional as she said, "I want to thank you, because now I realize the importance of putting this down, because I need my children to know who their father is. And as I was writing, I left out something. And it was something that you mentioned, to please add emotion to your writing." She says, "I never thought about that. I completely left out that the twinkle in his eye and the warmth in his face at the birth of our children."
Mm.
And so it's wonderful. I was just so excited. And I've had quite a few people mention this, saying, "I never thought about that part."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so interesting, because just what you're saying right now, how you encourage people to write, really is the way that you write too, because you really are very descriptive and visual. Your books are very character driven.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, I mean, it's just really, you are right in there doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. Tell us about your series, and let's just kind of refresh listeners' memories of the series, of Family Saga in Bear Lake. Tell us about this. Yeah.
All right. I got started writing this Family Saga in Bear Lake, Idaho, because my ancestors settled in Bear Lake. They were the very first pioneers that went there. And so I had it was intriguing. I had an interest to this area.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to find out more about it. And there was so much intriguing history. I couldn't seem to put it into one book.
When did they move
so
there?
So it turned out to be a 5-book family saga.
Yeah.
I started out with Melinda. She's from Boston, from the east, and she comes out west to teach school and to try to do some good in her life, to make a difference in this world. And so she has her little adventures, like Butch Cassidy, he robs the bank, and this is a true story. And so I found out that the whole history of Butch Cassidy robbing the bank in Montpelier was completely recorded by the town, and so I used all of it. They even put down what the teller said at the end of the bank robbery. It is a blast to be able to put this whole thing in chapter 2 and then have Melinda be there to witness the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found out that bears were very common there. People had to be careful. There were bear attacks on sheep, their cattle. And so I had to put in a bear experience, and up at in the tops of the Rocky Mountains in Bear Lake, they have blizzards. It's very common, so I had to have a blizzard in there for one of the scenes. It takes a part from the late summer into the following year, into June. So
mm-hmm.
it's about a 10-month thing. That's the time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a blast to write, but I found out that I couldn't just have the one book. So I wrote I decided to write number 2, and number 3, and number 4, and then number 5. And number 2 was so much fun to write, because I sort of put the based the love story around the relationship of my mother and father. They were both writing to one another, but had never met. She was 25, and her girlfriend was afraid that she was going to be an old maid because she was so picky. She picked every man apart. Every man was not good enough for her, and she just wouldn't give a man a second chance. So she said, I want you to tell me what kind of a person are you looking for. My mother described what she was looking for. She says, I've got the guy for you, and gave his address to her, gave my mom's address to him. They began writing, and they fell in love in their letters.
Yes, it does.
And so, and they didn't even meet. They didn't even have pictures, and they fell in love before they got to meet. And it was a wonderful story. I love their story. They lived too far away for courting, so she went down to meet him for the first time. And stayed with her girlfriend because she was teaching school there. And she, when he walked through the door, she says, when our eyes met, my heart leapt within me, and a warm glow filled my soul, telling me that's the man you've been writing to, and that's the man you're going to be marrying. And she says he hadn't even proposed yet. The second time they met, he had to drive all the way to her home, and he proposed, and the third time was on their wedding day. So everything was in letters. Well, I kind of based this little story after my mother's little romance, although it's different because in the book, the man she's writing to is actually there. She gets to know him. I have two characters that you get to know, like the superintendent and this ranch hand of Gilbert's that comes from book two. Gilbert and Melinda come from book two. In fact, they're in every one of my books. I don't leave out Gilbert and Melinda in any of the books. They have to be main characters along with the new characters. And so she gets to know these men, and she also gets to write to this mysterious stranger. And during the meantime, I have the tall Texan from Texas, and he's 6'1". He's part of the Wild Bunch, and I bring him into the story along with another Wild Bunch character called Gunplay, and they are getting ready to try to put together a plan to rustle the cattle of Gilbert and Melinda. And so I have a few things going on in there. Plus, Melinda, she is with child here. She's threatening to miscarry. So Edith, she's a nurse. She comes to Bear Lake to take care of her cousin. And so I've got three plots going on in the story. And I was a little worried at first, wondering, oh, no, maybe I've got too many plots going on because I didn't want to overwhelm people. And so I have the plot with Gilbert and Melinda, you know, that she's pregnant. And then the plot with Melinda and, I mean, Edith, the mysterious stranger, and who is he? And then she knows these other two guys. And then we have the third plot with the tall Texan, and he's putting this spy to find out what's going on. And the spy's name is David.
Mm.
And David gets to know Jenny, and they become very good friends, and Jenny starts to like him an awful lot. And so you start to wonder, will Jenny find out who he is, that he's really a cattle rustler, before she loses her heart? So I asked quite a few of the people that read my book afterwards, some of the reviewers, and even my own children, all right, I need to know, was three plots too much? And every person I talked to said, no, it was so intriguing because I couldn't wait to find out what was going to happen to the other characters.
Mm.
And so I was really worried at first. I was really worried, but they says it was hard to put down because you did have three plots going on. So I breathed a breath of relief.
Well, you have a lot of adventure in your books, and you keep that going with the different plot lines. And, you know, with these different plots and these characters, you know, you told us about Edith, obviously the book, Edith and the Mysterious Stranger. So there's a romantic plot right there. But then we have the romance between David and Jenny. And it's interesting the way you really incorporate romance in your books as well. And that seems to be a very important factor in your writing.
Thank you. I try to make my romance clean. I try to always make it so it's for all ages. And this New York newspaper reviewed my books, and she says, I believe that as young as 16 years old could read your books. And she was very, very sweet. She was very complimentary because she said, I began reading your books because my name is Melinda, too.
Oh.
And so she says, when I saw it sitting there to be reviewed, I couldn't help but pick it up because my name is Melinda. And she was so humble and so sweet because she said, I'd like to review your other books too because I enjoyed it so much. And she made me feel really good inside because she said that.
Mm.
And I thought, oh my goodness, I should thank you for doing this, for reviewing my books.
Do you think there's a stronger need for more clean romance type of fiction on shelves these days?
Yes, definitely. I've had so many people write to me, email me, and say how much they enjoyed it because it was free of violence and sex and swearing. And with me, if a guy is mad, I just do what Louis L'Amour always did. Louis L'Amour wrote, he swore softly, or he cursed. That's all you need.
That really
is. You need to put in swear words to make a book interesting. You can say he cursed, and that does it.
Yeah.
You don't have to say the words. And I feel like that Louis L'Amour is one of the great all-time authors. He's a good example of putting together adventures and wonderful stories without having to make it R-rated.
Mm-hmm.
It's G-rated for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Now, you write a lot of your main characters as women, and I'm interested in knowing why you are choosing to explore your novels from the female perspective, and then what you particularly, I don't know if there's any challenges writing, because, you know, it's, many people think that women back in that era were very submissive and, I don't know, not a big factor, but you create some very independent, strong-minded women.
Yes, and I bring out, in each book, I bring out that what was happening with women's rights. In each book, all five of my books, I bring out what's happening with women's rights. I start out in 1896, and then Edith and the Mysterious Stranger is 1904. Jenny's Dream is 1908. David and the Bear Lake Monster, and by the way, I do have, that's David, the first man.
Oh, okay, yeah.
From his perspective now.
Mm-hmm.
And so David and the Bear Lake Monster is 1912, and then Elena, Woman of Courage, is 1925. In each of these books, I bring out about women's liberation and what was happening, and some of the remarks. I did lots of fun research in newspapers on the Internet. I would type in what was in the newspapers during these times, this certain year. And a newspaper article will come up, and they'll say 1896, and I love it. So I take it, and then I put it in my book, and I put down the exact date and the person who wrote it.
Mm.
And then the same thing for 1904, 1908, 1912, and 1925. I put down in each of them that they were found in magazines. And it makes it so much fun because you see the people, that the women are fighting for their rights, and it's very interesting about how people are so upset about women's rights. And so I put those in too, and it makes it really fun.
Mm-hmm. When you first started writing and you were beginning with your short stories, were they with a female focus as well, or did that just kind of come about in this series?
And no, as I wrote my family history, I did both my grandparents, great-grandparents, on both sides, both men and the women. And I try to give the man's point of view in each of the books. It's just named after them, like Melinda the Wild West, Edith the Mysterious Stranger, Jenny's Dream. It's named after the women because, like what you said, they are the main characters. But I do have the perspective from the man's point also. And then I go through it with my husband. I say, is this what a man really feels?
Mm-hmm.
And he'll tell me.
Mm-hmm.
He'll say, yes, definitely. Or he'll say, well, not exactly. This is how we feel when we're in a situation like this. And so it's really fun to go through it with my husband. And I ask him these little questions, and he'll answer them truthfully, and it makes it fun for me because I'm getting to know a man's perspective by, you know, talking with him. And so I felt really good about each of my heroes in each of my books,
mm-hmm.
that when I did their perspective, it felt really good.
It felt good.
Okay. And so that's why I did David and the Bear Lake Monster, because now this is all around David.
Yeah,
and
the heroine
is also a main character, but she's like with all the other books where the men are the second character.
Oh.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Established in 1998, Rebecca's Reads is a book review and publicity service serving a large reading audience as well as a wide community of authors, publishers, publicists, and buyers and sellers. They offer reviews of recently published books as well as chapter readings, teasers, and videos to help you decide what book you would like to read next. Their insightful author interviews take connecting reader and author one step further, and if you decide you would like to purchase a book, an easy-to-navigate link will allow you to purchase the book immediately online. For the authors, publicists, and publishers, Rebecca's Reads has a variety of publicity services to help them market their books to their reading audience. Their services are budget-friendly and effective. For buyers and sellers, they have a monthly list of current reviews in the Book Review Index for easy browsing, as they know your time is precious and efficiency is the priority. Be sure to visit RebeccasReads.com and browse around their new space. Whatever your literary need, this user-friendly website may be just what you're looking for. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with Linda Weaver Clark, author of Edith and the Mysterious Stranger. You can find out more about Linda through her website, lindaweaverclark.com. Yeah. I was wondering, because, you know, I have the whole list of the books in the series, and it's a woman, and then, oh, here's a David. And then so I'm wondering why his character was so, I don't know if it was so important, but that he had such a strong character that you decided to have a whole book around him.
Yes, I did. It's the David from book two.
Yeah.
The David that meets Jenny. I fell in love with David, and I needed to bring him back. There was something intriguing about his personality, something intriguing about his character that I felt like he needed to come back. And he comes back so he can prove that the Bear Lake monster doesn't exist. But boy, you know what I found out in all this Bear Lake history? That if you try to prove that the Bear Lake monster doesn't exist, you're in deep trouble.
Uh-oh.
They get very upset at you. They believe in the Bear Lake monster, and some of their ancestors and some of their grandparents have claimed to seen it. It's written down in history, and it's written down in their own family history. I've had someone say, my grandmother, she saw the Bear Lake monster. And this is a relative of mine. I says, really? And she says, yes, and I believe her. And so you don't diss their Bear Lake monster. It's almost like the Loch Ness monster.
Mm-hmm. So this is true history of Idaho.
Yes.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yes. And they still, you know, talk about the Bear Lake monster. They really do. And lots of scientists went there to try to prove that it was just a myth, that it was just an old Indian legend only. But the scientists couldn't disprove it. They couldn't. But then there's no way to prove it either.
Oh, you know, it's so fascinating because I've never heard of the Bear Lake Monster, but I'm from Canada. And in southern BC, there is the Ogopogo, which is in the Okanagan. And it's some, you know, mysterious monster that people see as well that's similar to Loch Ness. And so they've had people scouring that lake as well. And you know, so it's interesting that these stories are familiar in different areas.
Yes. And it's so interesting how they really defend the Bear Lake monster. I thought maybe, they probably would just, you know, laugh about it and say this is an old Indian legend. I didn't realize that they take that seriously, and the people whose ancestors who said they saw it take it so seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm.
That's great. So, Linda, how important is it for you when you are writing historical fiction? How important is accuracy? Like, I'm wondering what is vital for you to keep true to life, and then what do you allow yourself to create?
I see what you mean. Okay, here's a really good example. In Jenny's Dream, which is number three book that's right after Edith,
mm-hmm.
Jenny's Dream, I bring out old Ephraim, the 10-foot grizzly bear. He is completely true. He existed. he was sought after because he wreaked so much havoc. And I got the little booklet. It was given to me by the great-grandson of the man who wrote the little booklet all about old Ephraim and how all of the havoc that he had wreaked, all of the everything that he did, and it even told all about Frank Clark, who had finally caught old Ephraim and was able to shoot him. Frank Clark said afterwards how he regretted having to shoot the bear. He told how it tore him apart that he had to do such a thing because he was such a magnificent beast. And so in reading about Frank Clark's feelings, how he had to do it because he was not only killing the sheep and the cattle of the area, but he was scaring people to death. Sheep herders. They had a tough time getting sheep herders because they were so afraid of this bear.
Mm.
And so because of the havoc he was wreaking, they had to get rid of him. But in reading all about everything he had to do to get this bear and his true feelings about how it hurt him to have to kill this magnificent bear, I was able to take all of his feelings and his emotions, put them into my own words, and give them to Gilbert.
Mm.
I was able to take all of this experience of old Ephraim, and I put it all in my book, and in my preface, I put down everything about this bear that I put into my book is true.
Mm.
The only thing fictional are my characters.
Ah.
And then, because I've given old Ephraim to fictional characters, I felt the need to change his name. So I tell my preface that I changed his name from Old Three Toes, because that's what he was known as,
mm-hmm.
from Old Three Toes to Old Half Paw. This way everybody knows that the story itself isn't true, just the bear itself is. So
mm-hmm.
my preface, they know everything about the bear is true, and then it's now historical fiction because I've taken something from history and put it into my book, but I have my fictional characters.
Mm.
And it was a blast to write because I had so much fun doing the research.
Mm-hmm.
And the great-grandson says, you use everything you need in this little booklet. So I put credit to the booklet, so in case somebody wants to ever get it and read about it. But, boy, everybody tells about it in the Boy Scouts. They take the Boy Scouts out, and my brother's a Boy Scout leader. He says every year the Boy Scouts want to hear that story be retold.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
He
roamed all up and down southern Idaho into northern Utah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's called the Wasatch Front.
Oh, that is some
Rocky Mountains.
Gosh. So you must, in the whole research process, do you compile like a lot of information? What does that look like for you? Like, are you getting books and articles and all of that, or how do you work that all out when you're writing?
I have a whole list of stuff I want,
mm-hmm.
and then after I write all the list of what I want in my book, I do my research.
Mm.
And when I do my research, if there's something interesting, I'll write down all of these quotes. And then if I want to use it as a quote, then I make sure I put it in as a quote from a newspaper. So when Uncle William is reading this, he's reading the real quote. And then in the author's notes, I say, this comes from this newspaper, and it's true. And he'll say, do you want to hear this? And he'll quote the name of the author who wrote the article. He'll quote which journal or which newspaper it came from and which date.
Mm-hmm.
And so my readers know about the quote. If it's something I don't feel like needs to be quoted, then I'll just put it into my own words. And that way I can have it more in a story form. But I love to find out all I can about history and put it into my book to make it feel real, to bring it to life, and to also educate my readers. I've had a lot of people write to me and say, I had so much fun reading Melinda the Wild West because of all these fun little tidbits you'd put into your story.
Mm.
And then they'd say, I didn't know that yellow pencils were the reason why yellow pencils were painted yellow. I have had so many people write to me, and you know, that was just one little tiny paragraph where Melinda is setting out everything for the school, and I needed to know if she was going to set up slates or pencils and papers. I needed to know what they used. So I did research, and when I found out why they painted pencils yellow, and because it used to just be the wooden color, I had to put that in because it was for her time period, 1896. So I put that in as just a little tidbit, a little baby paragraph, and I have received so many emails about that.
That's great.
I'm so surprised. That's so if anybody wants to know, they'll have to read the book.
They will have. Well, that's a good teaser there, Linda. So let me ask you, has your family, I'm not sure if your parents are still around, but have your kids read the books that you've written so far?
Yes.
And so
yes, my children have read it, and I was, I don't know if all authors feel this way, but I was on pins and needles. I was worried, oh, my children like it. What will they think? And I was worried that, you know, what if they don't like it? And oh, I was just worried so much. But I worried all for nothing because all of my daughters attended, said they loved it, and they couldn't wait till book number two. And then now they let's see, one daughter didn't say, I can't wait till book number two. She didn't say that. And so I wondered how much she really liked it. After she read book number two, she says, I enjoyed it so much more because of all the plots. She says, now I can't wait for book number three. So with some of them, book number two intrigued them. And with others, book number two intrigued them more. And so they're all different.
Oh, that's great. So what was it like for you when you discovered originally the letters that, and you got to see this very romantic side of your parents? Did you know them that way before the letters?
I didn't know it. I didn't know it. All I knew was about their courtship, and my mother would tell me about it and how romantic it was. And so I wrote my book about the courtship, not knowing what the letters said. And then after my book was printed, was you know already released, my sister says, we found the letters because my dad passed away. And so they went to clean out the house and get things, and they found the letters that that he wrote to my mother. We can't find the letters that she wrote to him, so we don't know if he kept them or what, but we found the letters that my mom had kept that he had written to her. And as I read them, he was so romantic. I wept in some of them. And some of them just made me just, oh, my goodness, my dad was so romantic. I didn't even know that a man could be this romantic. He was more romantic than my husband. My husband has his own kind of romantic way about me. But my dad, his was in words. It's very difficult for a man to be romantic in words, I think. And so I was very impressed. And so we copied all the letters, and I have the letters. And my sister has the original because she's older. But I thoroughly enjoyed reading the letters that they wrote back and forth, and how you could see they were falling in love.
Oh, that must be so sweet. And especially, you know, men in that time, I don't think that they were very outwardly verbal about romance and that sort of thing. So that is very precious to have.
And that was in, the early 1940s, I think that was, when they were writing.
Oh, that's so great. Tell us, your website is lindaweaverclark.com. And
yes,
now are
there's
you...
an E in the end of Clark. So.
Okay, yes, let's definitely make mention of that. And so your Family Legacy Workshops is your listing of dates up on there?
Yes, you just have to click on upcoming events, and then it has a complete description of my Family Legacy Workshops. It describes what I teach, and then it shows all of the places that I've gone and will be going to, and if anybody is interested in having me teach it at their library, then they can get in touch with me, or they can see if I'm going to their area. They can go and take the class. It's always free. It's free to the public. That's the way the libraries work.
Oh, wow. Well, what a great service to offer for the communities around the country. So have you had any feedback with anyone that's been at any of your workshops in maybe stories they've put out or actually published themselves?
I've had quite a few say write to me and say, thank you so much. I have finally finished my book. I'm so grateful I went to your workshop, things like that. And I received two compliments that really touched me, touched my soul. They were both, these two women were both professors at a university. The first one was in California, and I was so grateful. I didn't know she was a college professor, or I would have been very nervous.
Nervous.
And she said, she raised her hand at the end, and she says, I just want to let you know that I've gone to many writing workshops at the college, and this is the best one I've ever attended. Well, the second one I went to that told me this was from Phoenix, Arizona, and she raised her hand at the very end of it, and she says, I'd like you to know that I'm a professor at the college here, and she could see me get wide-eyed, and I was worried what she was going to say.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, I've taken many classes here at our university, and I want you to know that I have learned more in these 2 hours than I have learned in a 6-week course, and I want to thank you. I felt like I wanted to just cry right there. It touched my heart. I thought, oh, my goodness. I felt so humbled that she would say such a sweet thing. And it's never left my mind. My daughter was there with me, and I'd say to my daughter, you know, authors, everybody, they get discouraged. You know, we get depressed sometimes.
Sure.
So I'd say to my daughter, will you please tell me what that lady said once again?
We need to hear it.
I have to hear it during one of my
seasons. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so sweet. In fact,
there's this one library that has asked me to go there that she says, I want you to teach our youth, and I want you to know that the youth here, just for your information, are runaways, and some are homeless, and some have bad family situations. And we're going to have this youth come to the library, and there'll be about 30 of them, and I would like you to teach them the writing experience. But I wanted you to know this beforehand, because you teach how to write your family legacy, and I wanted you to know about this so you could touch this, you know, sensitively,
mm-hmm.
because they come from broken homes and bad family situations and some runaways. And so I says, that's okay. I've taught the youth before, and I've taught this class at a library with other high school students, but this will be my first one where it's the situation, you know, with the runaways.
Yeah, what a powerful experience that will be for you and for them,
yes.
Obviously.
Wonderful.
That can be very, very transformative for those young kids. That just puts a whole deeper layer onto that, the work, the family legacy type of work.
Yes, yes, and I'll be able to ask, how many want to write about their own history or about your family, or do you want to only write fiction?
Mm-hmm.
Then when I find out what they're interested in, I'll be able to know what to, how to teach it.
Yeah.
Because if they are so turned off towards family, I'll have to steer away from that and probably teach more on the writing aspects of what they can do with their own talents.
Mm-hmm.
But if they want to write about their own family and their situations, that's a healing process to me.
Definitely.
And you can write about your own problems and your situation you've had to go through and why you've got family problems. Many times that can heal you, and so I'm hoping that they'll want to write about that.
Yeah. That is so exciting, Linda. Well, I am just looking forward to the next time you and I talk, because I will find out how that all went. And I know Denny's Dream is going to be coming out. That's your third book, and that's going to be coming out sometime this year as well.
Yes, probably by, officially released probably by October.
Oh, good. Well,
yeah.
Wonderful.
Advanced copies before that, but the official date.
Okay, but right now you're focusing on Edith and the Mysterious Stranger, and we certainly hope.
It was just barely released in June. Edith
It just came out, just hit shelves, so we need to give it a little time to get some momentum going, of course.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations, Linda, and thank you so much for joining us today. It's been great getting a chance to talk with you again.
Thank you, Juanita.
Yes, did you have any final thoughts you wanted to just put out there to listeners today?
The only thing I can say is that we should always search our family histories and find out who we are and be proud of our ancestors.
Mm, Wonderful thoughts. Thank you, Linda. We'll talk again.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, listeners, I've been talking with Linda Weaver Clark, her latest installment of her Family Saga in Bear Lake series is Edith and the Mysterious Stranger. Just hit shelves. You can purchase it through local bookstores as well as online bookstores, of course, and I believe through Linda's website as well, lindaweaverclark.com. And also you can find out much more about her family legacy workshops. She has other short stories up there. It's just a wonderful website, so do take some time to check it out. So thank you once again for listening to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.